Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you'd like to listen to this podcast ad-free and before it goes on general release, please consider becoming a patron from just £3 a month, or you can give a one-off donation via Acast Supporter. Both links will be in the episode description. Hello and welcome back to Your Conversations with Annalisa Barbieri. That's me. When I was growing up, my parents often used to tell me to be careful of people, perché sono gelosi, which means they're jealous. I didn't much listen to this advice because, of course, I thought I knew best. And also growing up, I didn't have the world's best self-esteem, and I think it's quite hard to think that anyone might be jealous of you when you don't think that much of yourself. But as I've got older and I've learnt more and listened extensively to people's stories in my role as the Guardian's agony aunt, I realised my parents had a really valid point. A few weeks ago, I was working with today's guest, psychotherapist Ryan Bennett-Clark, on a problem for my Guardian column. We weren't talking about envy, but as ever with my interviews, once we'd finished the official chat, we went massively off topic and we got onto the subject of envy, which is how the idea for this podcast was born. As I chatted to Ryan, I realised that so many things have their root in envy. Bullying, people copying you, people making those what I call under-the-radar bitchy comments, which leave you feeling pretty crap about yourself, when really it's the person talking to you who is making you feel like that. Ever had a friend who copies what you do, what you buy, maybe even where you go? Perhaps your rational brain is telling you it's a compliment, but your primal brain is uncomfortable with this. Well, you're right to be uncomfortable, and we'll discover why in this episode. It also made me realise that the advice we often give to children, who as ever are streets ahead of adults in honest feelings, that copying is the best form of flattery, is perhaps flawed. This week's guest is UKCP accredited psychotherapist Ryan Bennett-Clark, Nee Marjoram. Ryan has worked as a forensic community nurse within a prison, as well as providing psychotherapy within various NHS settings. He has a particular interest in working with the subjects of envy and stalking and their impact. In this episode, we will discuss the difference between envy and jealousy, how feelings of loss and anger can manifest as envy, and how that may present itself. How taking away from someone, or trying to, is often how envy is played out. And we discuss what envy isn't. It's not adoration. And this may be why we feel uncomfortable but try to reason it away. Ryan, welcome to the show. I think we've got a lot to talk about. Can we kick off with what the difference is between envy and jealousy? As I hear a lot of people saying, I don't get jealous, but I get envious. Is there a difference?
Yes, massively. Thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here. But yeah, you raise an interesting point because so many people will often use envy and jealousy interchangeably, but they are very, very different. If we think about jealousy, we tend to think about that where there has to be the presence of three or more people for jealous feelings to be involved. If we think about it a bit like a triangle, if we have a love object, let's say a partner, jealousy becomes the feelings of anger or fear that manifests when there is a possible interruption or risk of our loved object being taken away from us. Right. So jealousy would be the presence of another person, or it could be a job, for example, mm-hmm. that threatens the relationship that we have to somebody else. An example of that, we might see your partner becomes friendly with somebody in a work context. They then start to spend more time with each other. They might end up going on business trips together. We then feel terrified that the person that we love or the relationship that we have is then threatened by the presence of the other person. It can also happen with sibling rivalry, two siblings competing for the attention of a parent figure, or you may even have it where one of the parents may feel jealous of the presence of their child because of the special relationship that the other parent and the child have, and therefore they feel excluded and rejected. So that would be jealousy.
Right. And envy?
So envy is very different because what that pertains to is a relationship between two people. And we talk here about part object relating. So that means rather than us feeling that there is a threat to the relationship itself, envy becomes the angry feeling that somebody else possesses and enjoys something which is desirable for us. Mm-hmm. But it then goes even further because the impulse with quite severe pathological envy would be not only to take from the person that is envied, but also to spoil and contaminate it. It may be that there somebody possesses a certain look or has a certain career or a possession, something that we ourselves want but feel that we're lacking in. And we seek to take that from the envied object, the envied person.
How so? How might we do that?
So in some of the ways that you mentioned in your introduction, so it can manifest in quite subtle ways that we may start to adopt an image that mirrors the other person. We might find ways to attack that person. So you'll often hear somebody giving a compliment to somebody. So they may say, look at that person, they've got a really gorgeous body. Mm-hmm. And then followed by, but I bet they're really stupid. So what you have, and you hear comments like that all the time, something that's followed by some degree of admiration is then quickly followed by a swipe, which then spoils and contaminates this thing that was once enviable.
Yeah. So even if the person can't hear this, the subject of the envy,
sure,
it's still trying to spoil it in somebody else's eyes.
Yes. So it's often in fantasy that we might have some of these comments that are made. So it's a way of them making yourself feel better because you don't actually have it. If we were going to take it to a more extreme example, you could see it in vandalism. You could see it in internet trolling. So people posting really unpleasant comments about somebody's, I don't know, pictures on Instagram or about their family life or their holiday, finding some way to devalue and bring down the person that they're envious of.
Yes, I mean, I see this all the time. Just yesterday, I was looking at a recipe from an Italian on social media. She made this sort of pie thing using filo pastry, and someone had put in Italian, it's not really a homemade recipe if you're using shop-bought filo pastry. And I thought, is that really what you've taken away from that? Yeah. But of course, other people just piled in and said, I'm hoping that when you make spaghetti bolognese, then you make your own spaghetti because it's ridiculous. But I see this all the time. Some of them are more obvious than others. And I'm sure our listeners will absolutely identify. Do people know they're being envious? What are they getting out of it? You've mentioned they're trying to contaminate it, but it can't make them feel good.
Well, so this is the thing. In some ways it does, but it's only temporary. Because if we think about an envious person, the reason for their envy will be this inherent sense of lack. So when we're children, in our earliest years, we need to experience a sense of love, being loved, being attuned to, somebody mirroring back our goodness. Mm-hmm. And being able to give us a sense of happiness in our general existence. If that's lacking, then what the envious person will do is they will try and contaminate and spoil because it makes them feel better about themselves. So if they sufficiently devalue somebody else's experience or the way that they look, so contaminate and spoil them, that person no longer becomes the object of their envy. So there's almost this satisfaction, this triumph, that they've managed to destroy and spoil something that was so good. Because if they themselves can't have it, then nobody should. And then there's an even more sinister aspect of this, which again can play out, not only do they then contaminate and spoil or seek to take the goodness from another person, they then actually project into that person all the hated and unwanted and disowned parts of themselves. So if feelings of inadequacy, feelings of shame, feeling of self-disgust, maybe feeling unattractive, maybe feeling poor, whatever it may be. So if they engage in quite a systematic, I mean, we're talking quite an extreme example here, but if they engage in a real systematic attack on this person's life, the goal will be to destroy it sufficiently so that it's no longer enviable.
Right.
Because there's nothing worse for an envious person than to see someone who they perceive, and I say perceive because a lot of what they may see will be a fantasy or an assumption. There will be nothing more unbearable than seeing somebody who is perceived to be lacking in envy, because what that further highlights is their own lack. Whereas if they can destroy this beacon of goodness, whatever it may be, then they feel the lack much less within themselves.
I mean, after our conversation a couple of weeks ago, I really started to look at things differently. And actually, I think I said to you at the time, it validated some feelings I had about certain people.
Yes.
And I think that sometimes we have these uncomfortable feelings and we reason them away. My therapist always says that about me. I always try and reason think my feelings away where I used to. I pay much more attention now to how I feel. And also, we've all heard about children who sometimes say, oh, you know, I got this and then so-and-so copied me.
Yeah.
And they sort of seem to know that it's not a great feeling. Maybe they know what's going on more than we do because we've become socially conditioned to explain those things away. And we sometimes say to them, oh, it's a compliment, but it's kind of not. I mean, where's the line between someone... I certainly have copied people and they've copied me.
Yeah.
And I always try and credit people and say, so glad I did this. Thanks so much. Where's the line, though, between it being okay and it tipping into something
more sinister?
Yeah, or just really not very nice.
Yeah. Well, so if we think about those examples then, idealization can be a defense against envy. So people may idealize somebody. We talk about something called secondary identification, where we might mirror somebody, but as a way of trying to develop and grow our own sense of self, our own sense of self-esteem. So we may borrow aspects of another person's identity, say, but we use that then to build upon our own without necessarily trying to take from or attack or spoil something that belongs to anybody else.
Right.
I think what we're talking about when it becomes more sinister is when it's not enough to just borrow, get inspiration, say, from somebody else. There almost then becomes the next stage where the other person has to in some way be destroyed in order for you then to have it, because with an envious person, they deal in extremes. Something's either all good or all bad. And in order for them to feel all good, somebody else has to be made all bad. And if somebody else is all good, then they then feel all bad. So that's why there's this really harmful back and forth.
I've certainly had experiences of someone copying really quite a lot of things that I've done to the point where I started to feel uncomfortable, never crediting me, never mentioning it. And it's after speaking to you that a lot of things made sense. And I'm just trying to think about how this person spoiled things for me. And they never mentioned the things that they'd copied.
Mm.
What might be going on there?
There's something there about the lack of acknowledgement. Because if, like you said, if there is an acknowledgement, you've inspired me to look this way or to do something or to think a certain way, there's gratitude that's expressed there. There's credit. And that helps all of us to feel satiated, to feel appreciated. When something is then, I guess, borrowed, but there is no exchange, there is no gratitude, what we then have is a sense of taking. And let's say that your image or clothing, whatever it may have been, is then being copied. There is then a sense that you may be less likely to wear those clothes or to feel as special because now somebody else has cultivated that look for themselves. So your independence, your personal look that gives you joy is now no longer special to you. So that may not be a conscious contaminating, but it means that something in its essence has been taken away from you.
Mm. Yes, that does make sense. Can we feel envy and jealousy at the same time?
Yes, I would say so. We'll go back to the example of a rival to your relationship. And let's say one's partner and somebody else are getting friendly. Not only do we feel that there is a threat to our safety in the relationship with said partner, we might think, well, of course, my partner is going to get more attention than I do because they're more confident or they've got a better job or whatever it may be. So those feelings of jealousy then become accompanied by feelings of envy because we then perceive somebody else to have something that's giving them an advantage in the world that we ourselves don't have. Mm-hmm. Or we may then focus on the rival, say. And again, we may be asking ourselves, well, what have they got that I don't have? That means that my partner, for example, is more interested in them. So that can then fuel feelings of anger, fear, but also shame, inadequacy, self-doubt.
Yes, because we've spoken about how sometimes if somebody triggers a feeling in you of envy, it can be an opportunity for reflection about, you know, what are you not doing that you should be or what you'd like to do. I think it's when you start blaming the other person for the things you don't have. I tell you one of the phrases I get a lot because I don't fit into what people expect. Okay. I didn't go to private school. My parents didn't have any contacts. I didn't go to university. My grandfather was an illiterate goat farmer. So then they come at me with this phrase, it wouldn't happen today.
Wow. Okay.
And I've now started challenging people and asking them what they think. But it's interesting, instead of thinking as I would, wow, you've done this without any of the things that I'd have thought, they immediately want to close me down with, well, it couldn't happen today.
That's a really good example because there's that phrase, isn't there? You don't have to blow out somebody else's candle to make yours shine brighter. And that's what somebody's doing. So rather than the appreciation and the celebration of you and what you've accomplished all off your own back, it goes back to that swipe. They then have to find some way to dim your shine, to take something away and put doubt in your mind because they themselves will be feeling insecure. They themselves feel inadequate. So by making you question yourself or offering these barbed comments, they then put into you their own feelings of self-loathing or self-doubt. And that then becomes this real insidious dance that plays out in the envious dynamic.
Yeah. What would be a good response to that? What would you say?
I would almost challenge that and say, I'm really curious where that comment came from. I might even say, you don't have to blow out somebody else's candle to make yours shine brighter. And I wonder where that comment comes from. Because the thing with somebody who is envious, they are, as we said, they're trying to consume and take from you, but they're also seeking to project into you. And if we're able to recognize envy for what it is, we can then interrupt it. And by our saying a question like, I'm really curious where that comment comes from, or that's an unusual thing to say. Normally people would celebrate my accomplishment rather than trying to tear it down. I wonder what that's about for you.
Mm.
You're putting that back with that person so they can't engage you in this really harmful dynamic of mudslinging.
Ryan, one of the things I hear a lot within family settings is one member of the family may be fairly successful by sort of normal standards, but the rest of the family totally ignores what that person does. You know, I've had high court judges, actors, doctors, and they're just like, my family doesn't pay any attention to what I say. I mean, I remember hearing this doctor once who'd written a book, it'd been really successful. And he said, my mum literally won't listen to a word I say. So that ignoring, I get a lot of that in the family problems that I get. Is that envy?
I would say so. Because again, there's almost something that the denial of its existence becomes another form of attack. If it hasn't happened, if we're able to deny the success of another, then we can quash our own feelings of envy. So in a way, what it sounds like what the families are trying to do is defend quite heavily against their feelings of envy by pure denial. So there's not the usual devaluing of the other person or seeking to attack it overtly. By denying its very existence, it then means they don't have to face their own feelings of envy. But what then inevitably happens, and it'd be, I'm sure a lot of your listeners who have had those experiences will testify to, there is then shame, or there's self-doubt, there's feelings of hurt, of not feeling good enough, because there isn't that appreciation, there isn't that validation that all of us as human beings need to some extent. So what these people are left feeling is maybe feeling worthless, and that is the projection of the envious.
The others.
Yeah.
But humans are so fascinating, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
And sort of once you realise these things, it does make it a lot easier to deal with. And especially around Christmas, I get a lot of letters from people saying, you know, I'm going to go into the family snake pit. And these are the kind of comments I get. And I'm recognising them more and more as envy. Mm. Why do you think people find it hard to acknowledge or see envy for what it is? I certainly did. Why might that be?
I think because it's so insidious. I mean, if we think about all of us, we all have the capacity to feel envy. We all have the capacity to feel hate, anger, shame. So there are a lot of what we might think of as forbidden or shadow-like feelings that actually, if we acknowledge the presence of these from other people, it can mean having to acknowledge those feelings within ourselves. And that can feel terrifying. That can feel quite forbidden. But there is also something where to realise that you've been the victim of an envious attack, usually from people, actually, that we trust. So it might be a partner. It might be loved ones in our family. It might even be friends. That can feel like the most terrible betrayal, because envy is such a hateful feeling. It's filled with anger, it's filled with hate. So to be met with that experience, that emotion from someone we love, that can feel absolutely devastating. Mm. So we might find ways to even deny it or minimize it. But again, sometimes its presentation can be relatively subtle. And it's only if we're able to spot it and put all of those various experiences together that we're able to go, oh, of course that's envy. But sometimes, because of the presentation of it, it can be quite subtle and covert that we wouldn't automatically know it as envy, but we would certainly have a feeling of being diminished or violated or feeling spoiled in some way.
And the person doing the envying,
Do
you think they know what they're doing? How might they feel? I mean, we've spoken a bit about how they might feel, but do they have any idea what they're doing? Because sometimes I see, especially on social media, where you see people you don't know commenting, and I just think, what did you get out of that comment? I just don't understand it. And what might they be feeling? And do you think they know they're being envious, or have they convinced themselves it's something else?
I think often people will convince themselves that it's something else, because again, to acknowledge the envy within themselves evokes such a feeling of shame and guilt that then has to be defended against, which is why we sometimes see people idolizing, because that then becomes a defense against actually sitting with their own feelings of hatred. But when we talk about the contamination, that is often a very unconscious process. We move into quite a different realm when there is a conscious desire to take from and to contaminate and spoil. If we're thinking more about everyday envy, there will be something of those processes which are a lot less conscious. We may have quite an uncomfortable feeling that gets manifest within us. And like with all uncomfortable feelings, we will try and find a way to rid ourselves of that. And that means engaging in a certain behaviour which will temporarily satiate us, perhaps leave the other person feeling terrible, but that often isn't in the conscious awareness. It's more about how can I get rid of this unbearable feeling.
If you find yourself feeling envious, what questions might you ask yourself? I mean, for example, what I might say is to myself is, what's this bringing up?
Yeah.
What is it about my life that I'm not happy about and that person is provoking?
Yes.
What kind of questions might an envious person ask themselves if they indeed have that self-awareness?
We might ask ourselves, who is this person reminding me of? What are they coming to represent or symbolize, either as an ideal, or are they representing someone from our past? We might ask ourselves, okay, where do these feelings that I'm having at the moment, where does that take me back to in my past? If I'm feeling inadequate, or if I'm feeling this sense of lack or this sense of hate, where am I going back to? Is there something from my past that's being transferred onto this person? There can be something, I think we've said before, when we can have an envious feeling. If we have insight gives us the power to make choices. So if something that's once unconscious is brought into our conscious awareness, it brings us to a crossroads where we can say, all right, I could follow a very familiar trajectory, and that might be attacking, spoiling, contaminating the other person, trying to take what doesn't belong to me. Or what if I did something different? How could I create this outcome in my life that I desire without having to destroy anybody else or anything in the process? So that becomes the tipping point, when we can be aware of the impulse, which may be to spoil, destroy, contaminate, but we're making a choice. Can I do differently that actually doesn't have to harm anybody else, but actually can leave you with a sense of feeling full and grateful and appreciative for what you have or what you've created in your life, because it hasn't come from taking from another person?
I had a real turning point about 25 years ago. I was working at the Independent on Sunday, and I was, at the time, I had various sort of titles, but I really wanted to write more serious features. And because one of my jobs was fashion editor, I was never really taken seriously. And this new journalist started, and he got given a lot of the features that I felt I would like to have a go at. And I remember this evening I was working late, and he asked for help. And I've always tried to be a really helpful person, I think with a fax machine. And I pretended I didn't know. And I remember thinking, Annalisa, this is not you. And you need to get out. You need to change something, because you are starting to corrupt. You're not being helpful to someone. It's not his fault. And I left not long after, because I felt like I was a bit typecast, if you like. But I remember that moment. I remember that feeling. And I remember thinking, I am changing, because he's representing something that I don't have. And I did help him in the end. Yeah. I mean, this process took like maybe 10 minutes. But I'm really proud of that, because I could have carried on. But I remember how shit I felt about myself in that 10 minutes where I could have helped, but I didn't, because of what was going on. Because that was envy, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that shows such insight on your part, because it's such a deeply unpleasant feeling when we have it. And when we do engage in that, let's say, punishing behaviour, it does give rise to feelings of guilt. But actually, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Because in that moment, the feeling of guilt that you felt, it activated a very real conscience that you had, and your capacity to empathise, your capacity to mentalise, and to then do something very different. So the problem can come when somebody has a very traumatic and disturbed history, but their capacity to empathize and to feel appropriate guilt is absent. And that's then when we can go into more dangerous territory, where the simple feelings of envy aren't then mitigated and adapted against. They actually then become fuel for an incredibly dangerous and disturbing fire that can then lead to even more insidious attacks on somebody.
Can we talk a little bit, we have already touched on it, but about the origins of envy? I mean, we mentioned that, you know, it can start, like so many things can, in childhood. But given that we all have the capacity, but some of us short circuit that envy or are able to look at it and do something about it, where might it come from? I mean, say like you're a parent of a young child and you're thinking, I don't want my child to grow up to be envious. What are the qualities that we can try and give our children? Or where does envy come from, Ryan?
So a lot of the research, and this comes from Melanie Klein, and she wrote a fantastic book called Envy and Gratitude in 1957. What she talks about is how the earliest relationship that we have with mother, she talks a lot about the breast, but we can think about that as being symbolic of sustenance and nourishment and predictability and continuity. If we're wanting to have a good enough sense of self and to internalize a good object, say, so our primary caregiver, what we need to be met with is consistency, attunement, care, love. We need to have somebody who's able to reflect back our goodness and to delight in our presence, to feel happy in our presence. This is the part that we often forget. It's not all about all the good things that we can bestow, because we're human, we're fallible, we're not always able to get it right. But it's about being able to recognize when those ruptures inevitably take place, when we're misattuned, to be able to then make reparation against those misattunements, and to be able to bear sometimes the child's anger, the child's fear, the child's envy, the child's dislike. It's about being able to celebrate and embrace all parts of the child, and to survive, to show that we're able to survive all parts of them, so that they don't have to hide and split off certain feelings or aspects of who they are. So we talk about an exchange of loving, so the child being able to express their love towards the primary caregiver, that love being accepted, and then also being reciprocated. So if we have this sense of continuity, the child is able to internalize a good sense of other, but also a good sense of themselves. So even when they're faced with difficulties or adversity later in life, they have these qualities to draw upon. And that's not to say that we know we're still not going to feel frightened, or we're still not going to feel traumatized by terrible things that happen, or we're still not going to feel depressed. But we have an inherent sense of goodness within us, of love, of gratitude, of enjoyment, that we're able to draw upon. So even then, if we experience somebody else as having something that we don't, the impulse is to explore ways that we might acquire that for ourselves, which doesn't involve the attack of the other. Whereas if the child, for example, is met with misattunement, absence, frightening experiences, somebody who only shows hate or hurts the child, their sense of safety in the world becomes greatly compromised. Their inner world and inner objects, so the internalization of the other, becomes one of fear, of persecution, of aggression. And that's then what gets expected in the world, and certainly what gets played out.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So it really is to do with self-esteem?
Yes. Yes, I would say so.
Because that comes from really knowing who you are, and because we can't control all the bumps in the road in life, but we can do something about the suspension on our car.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, some people won't have had the world's best upbringing or most attuned, but they don't necessarily go on to be envious, do they?
No. So with that, what we would then be considering is that they may not have had the greatest upbringing, but there may be other people who have been manifest in their life. It could be a teacher, it could be a nanny, it could be a kindly neighbour, it could even be a friend. So somebody who has been able to, in some ways, fill that deficit, and particularly from an early age. So they've been able to internalise a good enough experience of being in relationship with another person. So somebody who was able to delight in their sense of self. What was interesting is I used to work as a forensic community psychiatric nurse in a prison. And there we have the classic example of what can happen when people have had quite frightening and disturbed histories or being in one place. Because if you think about why people are in prison, it's because they have taken, or they have spoiled, or they have contaminated, or they have violated.
Mm.
All of these are themes that we see in envy. A lot of the histories of people in said institutions all follow a very similar pattern. So these very disturbed environments where there would have been an absence of somebody to give them that sense of self-esteem, of kindness, of goodness, and to then also be able to empathise for another person. Whereas because of the absence of that, you end up with an environment which just becomes saturated with envy, with hate, and people who have, yes, taken from others, violated others. And that feeling then can become quite toxic, especially when it's confined to a single space.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting the image of someone who has really lacked something and is going through life trying to take it what they're lacking from other people. And instead of that phrase, working on themselves, because I think it takes such a lot of self-awareness. For anyone listening who perhaps, you know, not at that extreme level, but I keep going back to the family things, this is what I hear a lot about. If you're having to deal with someone who you feel you now recognise is envious of you and is constantly making barbed comments at you, like you said, all that, it would be wonderful to think we could just say to someone, hey, you know, why are you doing that? It's not always possible.
No.
And my partner sometimes says to me, so he witnesses things and he's like, you could have wiped the floor with that person. Why do you let them get away with it? And the reason I do is because I sense a frailty in them. And I think if I really were to answer you back the way I want, you'd probably end up crying, which has actually happened a couple of times where I've challenged people on what they've said to me.
Sure.
So I think sometimes, again, you know, we're not all Maggie Smith in Downton Abbey, which has this amazing script where we can say these things back and then it cuts to the next scene.
Sure.
On a more everyday level, if you recognise this, and I think this might be envy, how might you deal with it?
Well, exploring your own boundaries and thinking about actually how healthy it is to have this person in your life. Because to be repeatedly exposed to somebody's envious attacks, you know, whether it be from a friend or a partner, you can think about it as being a bit like a drop of water on a stone. You know, a single drop doesn't appear to make a difference. But actually, if that drop of water is consistent over time, it creates a pretty significant erosion to the point where you end up with this hole. And you can then end up holding aspects of this other person, their inadequacy, for example, and starting to believe that it's your own. And the result of that may mean that you start to then devalue yourself. So if you then start to take good things away from yourself, then it means you're in some ways trying to protect yourself from being the object of somebody else's envy. But what that means is then destroying yourself. So I would be encouraging people to think about the reality of these relational dynamics and how healthy that is, to really start to reconnect to it and explore aspects of yourself, your own identity, your life, that actually does bring you enjoyment, that you can feel appreciative for, that, that really give you a sense of your soul singing. Because to be in constant contact with the envious person is actually going to be eroding over time your own sense of goodness, your own sense of self, and possibly leaving you holding processes and even personality traits that actually don't belong to you. So there, like we said, it would be wonderful to be able to have those conversations, maybe to shut someone down and challenge them. And if you can, then great. Or certainly invite that other person to be curious about themselves. But if that doesn't feel possible and actually the relationship is starting to become harmful, I would be exploring ways that you can reassert perhaps some of your boundaries for your space, for your time, and whether or not that person is actually a good enough person to have in your life.
Yeah, I think sometimes the letters I get anyway, there's a sort of given that you don't always have to get on with your family and you have to put up with certain things. And I think absolutely, if somebody is really corrosive, you have to really think about whether you want them in your life. But the letters I get, it's more occasional, you know, got a wedding coming up, or it's Christmas or this, or, you know, there's a mother-in-law or a sister-in-law or a father-in-law or et cetera that they have to deal with. I mean, there's a couple of phrases that listeners might find useful, which I use. One is, what do you mean by that? Because it really makes them dissect it.
Yes.
And sometimes they kind of panic. It's also a really good way of buying time.
Yes.
I used to have a really tricky editor and she was always asking people to rewrite copy for no reason. And one day I was so fed up. I was not hindered at the time with, you know, children responsibility. I could be a bit braver than everyone else. And she was ranting and ranting about a piece that I'd written. And I just went, so what do you mean by that? And she went, oh, forget it. It's fine. And I thought, wow, that's a really useful phrase,
yeah,
actually, because it made her think about it. The other thing, which is harder to use, and a couple of my friends who are teachers use this, shout out to my friend Lisa, and she said it's been really helpful, is sometimes you can say to people, did you mean that to sound so bitchy? Because then what they have to do is either say yes, and a lot of it, like I said in the intro, is under the radar. Everyone knows what's going on, but no one calls it out. Or they have to go, oh, no, sorry, I didn't mean to say that. It's really, really effective if you're brave enough to say it.
Yeah.
And sometimes the situation just isn't suitable and you have to take all these people's crap and deal with it. And it's really, really hard. But I mean, what would you do at a party if someone said to you, oh, Ryan, it's all right for you with your practice and blah, blah, blah. What would you say to them?
I might say something very similar to what you said there. That sounds really envious. So
would you just say that?
Yeah.
That's really good. I'm going to try it.
Just call it out for what it is. And I'm aware that there would be a part of me that could become very defensive. And I would say, I've worked so hard to get to this point. Or I might even say, I wonder what you imagine I've actually done to get to the point where I am. Because then again, that puts the focus back on them to really think about and share whatever their fantasy or assumption is, because they may in their mind think, well, you've got your practice, you've had this handed to you, or have all sorts of fantasies, which people, you know, they do about our lives. But actually inviting them to share with you what their fantasy is, it then gives us an opportunity to then say, well, actually, this is the reality. And that can then take some of the sting out of that.
I think if you can laugh it off, it's really effective. But like you said, sometimes it triggers the defensiveness. I think children see a lot of envy played out now, and it's really hard for them to cope with and say all these things, because it can make us really defensive. And before you know it, you reeled off your CV to someone
that yourself. Yeah.
You just met at a party and you really don't care about. So it's quite good. That's why that phrase, what do you mean by that, is really useful, because it's not aggressive. Any other ideas to interrupt somebody's envious poisoned arrows darted at us?
An invitation for them to consider what they in their own lives might be grateful for. So if they're trying to put the focus on you and to tear you down, what we might do is say, well, actually, I'm aware of this happening in your life, and that sounds really wonderful. How about telling me some of the things that you've done in your life? So putting the emphasis back on them, where they actually get to consider, perhaps, what they're able to find enjoyment and gratitude for them in their own life. Because what one of the things that Melanie Klein speaks about says that the best antidote to envy and greed is enjoyment and gratitude. And a lot of the work that we would be doing, let's say in a clinical setting, with somebody who was envious, would be trying to help them have those more reparative experiences where they're able to sit with and find enjoyment and gratitude for what, for the existing qualities that they do have, rather than having to take from the other
people.
You said something about that there's sometimes a sense that you've had that if you wanted to, you could absolutely annihilate somebody, but because of your compassion and empathy, you wouldn't do that because you're able to see the vulnerability and the possible shame that's underneath that. So I think it takes a really big person to be able to, where possible, hold in mind some degree of understanding and compassion that there is actually possibly a very vulnerable, shamed, frightened, angry child part that's being enacted in the other person. And if we're able to meet that with a degree of compassion, we can start to diffuse some of those envious attacks. But again, it depends. I think that's much more likely to happen when we're talking about a less pathological form of envy. If we're talking about somebody who is more, let's say, forensically motivated, so let's say a stalker, or somebody who's abusive within a relationship, because actually envy can play out a lot in domestic violence situations or somebody who is physically abusive or sexually abusive. We're talking about a very different level of that pathological envy, which isn't so easily diffused in the way that we're talking about at a party.
No, and absolutely. And I think that I always caveat everything with domestic abuse or any kind of abuse. It's its own very special kind of category. If you're in a domestically abusive relationship, challenging the other person is really dangerous.
Absolutely.
And so you really must take specialist advice from places like Refuge, because they have people who absolutely know how to deal with it, because you're not really dealing with, quote unquote, a normal situation, the sort of normal.
No.
You're absolutely right. It's much more sort of pathological and potentially dangerous.
And that's why in those situations, it would be, as you said, much less about the confrontation, but actually more working with the victims of these attacks. And because envy is so prevalent in all of those really complex situations that we've just mentioned, the work then becomes helping the victim of said envious attacks to heal, to recover, to reclaim themselves,
yeah, and ultimately to get away.
To get away, absolutely. And
get
then
away
disentangle.
Safely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm sort of seeing it everywhere. Do you think we're getting more envious as we're able to peep into people's lives more?
I do. I really do. And I wrote a little bit about this in, so I had a couple of articles published. It was around envy and stalking. And I was talking about how there feels like a greater prevalence of being able to stalk because of social media. And we get to peep into other people's lives, or certainly a representation of other people's lives. We also have, you know, various television, reality TV shows, which show, again, the extremes of quite lavish lifestyles that people may lead. And it can be quite seductive. It invites us in to wonder about people, to create fantasies about people. And again, if we think about those extremities of somebody who lacks, and then what's being portrayed, certainly, you know, let's say the perfect Instagram picture, which portrays a moment in time, completely ignores all the steps that it took to create that picture, and I'm sure the arguments or the difficulties or the bad weather, whatever it may be. But you get these picture-perfect representations, which are so accessible, which then can fuel these feelings of envy in other people, because all they see is this picture-perfect representation, which then fuels a fantasy of everybody having more, and that just makes us feel like we have less. It's interesting, I think, with the rise of social media, reality TV shows, how that's possibly giving rise to a greater sense of envy because of almost a misrepresentation of what other people allegedly have, and that then highlighting the deficit that we then imagine we have.
Yeah, the fitness trainer Joe Wicks, I remember once he was talking about his 10-year overnight success, because people hadn't heard of him when he was outside Richmond Station or wherever he was giving out flyers for his boot camp. When they started to know him, it seemed like he had sprung from nowhere to become really successful. But actually, he'd done 10 years of real grind And really, that is the truth for most people who achieve things. Unfortunately, we see a lot of people becoming famous for seemingly not much. I would say that even then, there's been some sort of compromise or hard work. I don't know, but, you know, and that's all they see. Because also, how you get somewhere is doesn't really make for a very good reel on Instagram.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, gosh, do people want to see the amount of stories I had to go out and write in the really dodgy, dangerous places I went to on my own, you know, years ago? And I remember Susie Menkes, who's fashion editor of the International Herald Tribune, who's been doing her job for years and years and years. And she said, I've earned my place in the sun. And I thought, good for you. You have. And it's really easy for people to say, well, it's all right for her in the front row getting all this. But she's done the grind and she deserves her place. But people don't always see that, do they?
No. No, and they don't want to either. And again, there can be something by ignoring all of that. It means that there then becomes a perfect opportunity, if one does have envious impulses, to then rid yourself of those unpleasant feelings. So if you're able to appreciate the journey that someone's been on, well, then you don't get to feel that anger. You don't then get to spoil. You don't then get to rid yourself of those deeply unpleasant feelings or feelings of self-loathing. So I think people, particularly the envious people, they will love these various stories or these so-called, you know, overnight successes, because then that gives them a perfect outlet for all these pent-up feelings of hate and resentment. Mm.
Ryan, I mentioned in the intro that I think, or it seems, that envy is the basis of lots of behaviours, and bullying is one of them. Mm. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. And I think looking at school environments is a place where you see an awful lot of envy playing out. Again, there's a real sense, I think, particularly nowadays, of people seeing what other people have and desiring it, but also that fantasy about what other people have. When it comes to envy, there will often be an absence of enjoyment or happiness or love originating in one's early life. So if we think about a school environment, and actually I'll use an experience of my own. When I was 17, I came out as gay. But before then, both at primary school and high school, I received a degree of bullying in various forms for being gay. Now, I hadn't come out then, but I actually found that really interesting, and I've been thinking about it within the context of our conversation, because if we think about another word, well, another meaning for gay, it's happy. And if I think back about how I was as a kid, and yeah, a lot of kids these days, but I was very harmless, I was quite a sweet kid, and I'd find a lot of enjoyment and happiness in singing or dancing. But the people who would target me and bully me, they often came from backgrounds which there was a very clear lack of either care or love or happiness. So my life was no better or no worse. There was perhaps something about the happiness and that maybe the absence of envy that they perceived within me that then added fuel to this desire to spoil or attack. And I remember I used to be in the dance club. I used to love it. I'd go there on a Friday lunchtime with my best mate. And it brought me real, real enjoyment. But there would be times where people would then run past the door and they would shout insults at me. And something that became really precious to me, that was a real sense of expression and happiness and enjoyment, it started to become contaminated and spoiled. And I started to feel fearful. I'd start to feel inadequate and just really doubting myself, and to the point where I eventually stopped going. So I took it from myself because I didn't want to be visible. That's a process that I think will happen a lot in schools amongst children. There will be a real sense of people that have a sense of lack, and that's incredibly sad when we think about the environments that they will have come from. But from such a young age, how those very insidious and envious processes can then play out, where other children are then targeted and almost made to feel bad or inadequate or ashamed of themselves, because ultimately that's what the bully is feeling. So I think that's something so important for us to be aware of with our children, or thinking about children in school, about just how potent and powerful envy can be and how manifest it is.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I've always said to my children that happy people don't bully. But also there's been situations where I've tried to explain what might be going on for another child. And quite rightly, one of my children once said to me, but you know, Mummy, I'm really fed up of doing all the work for other people.
Yes, absolutely.
And I thought, gosh, that's really true. Do you know what I mean? It's like sometimes the sort of, I don't know how to describe them, but you know, that the children that maybe aren't lacking are emotional sandbags.
Yes.
The ones that are. It's like, at what point do you kind of say enough? And it is really hard. And I'm so sorry that you were bullied and that you stopped dancing.
Oh, yeah. I think the nice thing was there is that I also had a really great group of friends, both at primary school and in high school. So even though there was that aspect, I was still able to find that love and care from a really great group of friends. And then I've worked really, really hard all through my life now. And I almost feel like I'm doing that justification. But I've then worked really hard throughout my life to create a life that's very authentic to me, where I don't feel ashamed of any aspects of my life or my career or my relationship or the things that I'm interested in. So in a way, that feels like my revenge, that I'm happy.
And that is the best revenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
Success. I mean, if anyone's listening that is being bullied or has a child that is being bullied, do you have any advice for them? Or is indeed bullying?
Well, yes. So I think if your child is being bullied, believe them. Take that seriously. Ask them about the impact that it's having on them. Do whatever you can to protect them and get the right support and protection for your child, but continue to mirror back that child's goodness, how much they're loved, how much they're cared about. And in some ways, being able to actually try and explain, this is what's happening, this is what belongs to that other person. And you don't have to hold that. You're good enough, you're wonderful, and you're loved for who you are. You don't have to hold this other person's process because that belongs to them. And if your child is bullying, then there's something of a communication that's playing out there of anger or of fear, of unhappiness, and exploring with them what that's about, helping them to understand themselves, helping them to understand the impact of their behaviour as well. Because again, I think especially with social media, it's so much easier to write comments in somebody's inbox or to write aggressive comments about a picture and not see the impact that it's having on that person. So really encouraging your child to think about what the impact might be on that other person, because that's often, I think, what's lacking, that capacity for empathy, that capacity to mentalize and to show appropriate compassion.
Yes, because I also think sometimes, although bullies, it feels like they have a lot of power, I think they feel really powerless. It doesn't feel like that if you're at the receiving end of a bully. And what you say about school being a perfect environment is so true, because in no other place in life are we kettled together with people simply because our birthdays fall within 12 months.
Yeah.
Everyone's supposed to be at the same level because they're at the same age, and that's very important. When you're young, it's like, I'm 14, they're 14, but they're doing this. We don't really think about individual development or maturity. And I can see that that gives rise to a lot of envy, competition, feelings of inadequacy sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And a perfect opportunity and environment for scapegoating as well. Because people hate feeling othered. And if they can find somebody that is either different or, yes, again, has something that they long for, they become the perfect vessel to scapegoat, to put all the unwanted parts of yourself into, to deny those inadequate or disliked parts of self, put them onto another person and attack that in the other person so that you can have a sense of feeling powerful and superior.
Ryan, it's been an absolutely wonderful experience talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for
inviting me. It's been really good.
Me.
I hope you will come to any family gatherings / parties.
Absolutely. I'll be your wingman.
Thanks so much to Ryan Bennett-Clark. I hope you learnt as much as I did, and perhaps you'll now strike half your friends off your Christmas card list. If you'd like to read more about his psychotherapy work, Ryan has written two papers for the Journal of Psychodynamic Practice on the insidious dance of love and hate, an examination of envy and greed in the stalker-victim dynamic. I'll put all links in the episode bio. The series is produced by Hester Kant. The artwork is by Lo Cole, and our music composer is Toby Dunham. If you'd like to read my column in The Guardian, it's every week in the Saturday magazine.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, this is Annalisa. I started doing this podcast because it's an idea I really believe in, so much so that I decided to put my money where my mouth is and self-fund the project. I really want to keep releasing this podcast for free, so if you enjoy this episode, a way you can help is to visit our Acast supporter page and give what you can. You'll find the link in the episode description. Thank you.